To my first love, my beloved, it is my wedding night tonight. But instead of lying with my new wife, I'm sitting here in my study, writing to you. I could not bring myself to touch her. I could barely look at her. And now she lies in our marital bed, alone, while I sit here with a pen and paper. I know this is foolish. I know this letter will never reach you. But I did not know what else to do. I had to talk to you.
Welcome back to the Waterstones podcast. I'm Will Rycroft, and this year we have two new series for you. With hundreds of thousands of new books publishing each year in the UK, how do you go about finding the very best? In this series, I asked a group of publishers to pick just one new book for 2021, and then spoke to those involved in bringing it to readers. From author to agent, publisher to designer, and those lucky enough to be early readers, we're going to find out why this is the book. In this episode, we're going to hear all about the debut novel from Hafsa Zayan, inaugural co-winner of the Murky Books New Writers Prize. We Are All Birds of Uganda reaches across decades and continents with a dual narrative rooted in the brutal regime of Idi Amin. Over the next 30 minutes or so, we'll hear about the novel's rich themes and characters and why Hafsa is one of the most exciting new voices writing today. And we start at the very beginning.
To be honest, that would take you to me sort of lying on the floor of my bedroom, staring up at the ceiling and kind of going through in my head various ideas of what I might write about to enter the New Writers Prize. One day I got an email saying, we're launching this open submission competition. You only have to write 2,500 words to enter. And I thought, well, I can do that alongside my job, no problem. And I thought, well, why not? And I was actually having a kind of brainstorming session with my hubby. We were talking about the theme, which was supposed to be, you know, tell stories that aren't being told. And we were just flitting back and forth between us, like, oh, what kind of thing do you think they would be interested in? What kind of thing do you think we could write? Well, I say we, but I could write about, that something that's not being told. And I said to him, I would really want to write something about refugees. And he said, well, you know, obviously my family were sort of refugees because they came from Uganda in 72 after Idi Amin's expulsion order. And I said, oh, well, that's a brilliant story to write about, because that is something that I'd never heard of before I met my husband. And that's kind of where the whole thing began. With hindsight, I probably bit off a bit more than I could chew at the time. I thought, okay, well, I'll just write this story. The first Hassan letter, which is set in Uganda in 1945, so just after the Second World War, and, you know, pre sort of the initiation of the independence movement, but you're sort of heading there slowly. That letter was the 2,500 words that I submitted for the competition. And in order to write that letter, I spent, I think, probably about 4 or 5 hours at the British Library, just reading around the topic, researching, looking at books that I couldn't access online or couldn't buy because they were very expensive, or I didn't want to, I should say. And you know, that was 4 or 5 hours of that. But then I spent probably, you know, 10 to 12 hours just on my desktop at home, looking at, you know, academic articles, journals, other pieces of writing, memoir pieces, oral histories, all this kind of stuff. And that was just to write the first Hassan letter, because I wanted to get it right. And, you know, my in-laws are Ugandan Asians, but I didn't give the manuscript to my in-laws to have a look at until I'd finished it. In fact, I didn't give it to anyone to look at until I'd finished the entire thing. And of course, I got some feedback, and I had some really helpful, particularly in the Hassan letters narrative, from my in-laws on some of the points that were in there. But other than sort of talking to them generally, I didn't have anyone look at the text until it was done. After I'd submitted the initial 2,500 words, they shortlisted about 20 of us, and they asked us for our full manuscripts within 7 days. So I had 7 days to write basically as much as I possibly could, which was about 4 chapters. And it was off the back of those chapters. So I think I had 5 chapters in total. that the submission was judged.
Now, this seems like a good time to jump in because we're talking about a book prize here. And whilst the numbers of them are dwarfed by the numbers of books published each year, there are certainly more of them now than ever. So what is the Merkey New Writers Prize and what is its purpose? To tell us, here is Emma Wallace, Senior Brand Manager at Merkey Books.
So the New Writers Prize was sort of born out of an idea that, or born out of the reality really, that there's a lot of hurdles to become an author. There's a lot of, you know, things that you have to do, people that you have to know. It's quite an old industry. So for debut authors, and particularly debut authors from a underrepresented background, it felt like it was quite impossible to get into the industry and to become a writer. So when Merkey Books was created in late 2018 by Stormzy and Penguin Random House, one of the main sort of aims for the imprint was to not only go out and commission books for the imprint, but it was also to be able to reach people that never thought that becoming an author was a possibility. Essentially, the overall prize is that they can win a publishing contract with us at Merkey Books. So to take out all of the hurdles and hoops that you have to jump through to get your book published, it's quite a simple process. And throughout the prize, we also want to work with those writers and in a sort of mentoring capacity. So even if they don't end up winning, we want to ensure that each writer has got something from the process that can help them continue their sort of writing journey and be motivated and inspired to do that. So we have things throughout the prize, like our writers camp, for example, which is where they get to meet published authors. We've had Dorothy Coomson, Emma Dabiri, Candice Carty-Williams, all talking about their journey becoming a published author, you know, the hurdles that they had to jump, how it wasn't straightforward. They provide tips and tricks for these new young writers. And they also get to meet us as a team at Merkey Books, and we essentially explain the publishing process from, you know, how we acquire books and what that process and journey of the book is right up into it being published and the legacy after that. So they really get to grab as much knowledge as they can. A lot of them go away from that being quite inspired. And even if they don't make it to the end and become the final winner, you know, they've said to us that it's really kind of like galvanized them to continue their journey going forward.
And it should be mentioned that another part of the prize was representation from the Good Literary Agency. Here to explain a little bit more about what they do is Hafsa's agent, Abby Fellows.
So we were founded to create a space for writers from underrepresented backgrounds to have their work championed, but also to work a little bit differently from some agencies and really be able to invest in the development side of working with new writers. So we do quite a lot of sort of editorial work with people to get their books ready for submission to publishers, and also to demystify what it means to have an agent, how the whole publishing process works. I think it's really opaque. So we really wanted to just break down some of those barriers and hopefully create a safe space for people who feel their voices haven't been heard before. But I was really fortunate that I was actually reading for the very early stage of this competition, the long list. And I, by a twist of fate, I read Hafsa at that stage. So I did have that sort of buzz feeling you get as an agent when you read someone's work and you just think, wow, this is phenomenal. It was a sample, but it just showed her talent so wonderfully.
We often wonder what goes on behind the closed doors of the judging rooms on literary prizes, but here to tell us more about the process is co-founder of the Good Literary Agency, author and judge for the Merkey New Writers Prize, Nikesh Shukla.
The thing about judging new writing prizes, which I've done a lot over the years, is you're looking for something that's really, really hard to find, which is someone who has command of their voice, something utterly unique to say, and the potential to sustain that story for a long period of time. And I think a lot of new writers, you can kind of see who they've been influenced by or what they've been reading recently, or even like the particular thing that they want to get off their chest. And what was so great about the Murky Books Prize was it was so hard to choose a winner because you just had all of these people who, their voices were so fully formed. They had a different take on the world that just wasn't being published. And that, you know, that's the beauty of a prize like this with an imprint like Murky and an agency like ours. You're going to get the people who aren't traditionally coming through like various creative writing degrees or the types of journals or periodicals that agents sort of tend to find writers from. You're getting people who are coming to this because of like what those two brands mean. And it meant that when we read Hafsa's work for the first time, it just hit all of the things that I love. It was about the city that I love. It was about characters that I just hadn't seen on the page before. It was a view of the world that was just so lacking in literature, and it was so fresh, and also her voice was so filled with potential and wonder that it just, you know, while it was a hard decision, she was definitely like the best one that we read by far.
Just a confidence about it. It's really hard to explain. And I do think there is something chemical that happens in the brain when you are just in a world that someone has created and you know that they are so confident about it and that she understands this history, which is really complicated. She knows exactly who these people are. And, you know, I could ask her anything about them and she knows it's all in there. It's just so rich. And, you know, it just carried me along and it finished really quickly. It was quite a short sample. And I was just sort of, oh, like, what, you know, when can I read the rest of it? And that, as an agent, you know, other people will feel that.
And so Hafsa Zayan became the first winner of the Murky New Writers Prize, together with poet Monica Radayevich. But with just 5 chapters written and a tight deadline to meet, there was plenty more research and writing to be done before the story of Hassan and Samir would be ready for the next stage of publication.
I had a lot of anxiety, not necessarily during the time I was writing, but definitely during the time I was waiting for feedback. I kept the novel very close to me until it was completely ready, in the sense that I didn't have any feedback from Murky, even though they asked, obviously, multiple times, especially my editor, saying, well, you could send me a chapter every time you finish a chapter. And I said, no, I want the whole thing to be finished because the whole novel ties together. You know, what's relevant in chapter 3 is, you know, then suddenly you see why it's so relevant in chapter 7 or something. I didn't want them to receive it piecemeal. So I insisted on finishing it first, and they were okay with that, but probably happier if I'd just given it to them chapter by chapter. So I didn't have any kind of, you know, I was in a hole. I mean, another thing I've learned about writing is it's extremely lonely. And if you take the approach that I took, which was that I just want to sit in a hole, finish this whole thing. I don't want any input, any feedback from anybody until I've gotten out of my head what I want to say. And then, sure, you know, I'll send it to friends, send it to family, send it to, obviously, to the editors. You know, it can be an incredibly lonely experience. And I think for me, personally as well, because I was under quite a fair bit of time pressure, I'd won this competition in June 2019, and they wanted to publish in July the following year. And I didn't know at that time at all that there was, you know, lead times for everything, and you kind of had to have the complete draft completely finalized, you know, 3 or 4 months in advance of the publication date. And so they said, you know, do you think you'll be able to give us the manuscript by December? Which was 6 months. And at that point, like I said, I had 5 chapters. So I didn't have a great deal of time. And so, you know, like I was saying, it's a lonely process. It was even lonelier for me because I sacrificed a lot of social engagements and various other things to try to finish this. Spent all my weekends and evenings and annual leave writing the book. And so, yeah, it, weirdly, interestingly, I didn't have much support, but that was because I asked. I didn't want it. I asked for nothing until I was finished, at which point then, this was sort of November, December 2019, Murky became a lot more heavily involved.
When Murky Books was launched by Stormzy in collaboration with Penguin in 2018, it sent ripples across the book world at a time when people were asking how real change could be effected to improve the diversity of British publishing. But was this another token gesture, albeit with a famous figurehead?
I think so much bad faith is put on people like him and people like Marcus Rashford, and I guess to a much lesser extent, like people like me. Like, none of us are having these conversations or doing this work because we have time. Like, Stormzy is a world famous rapper. He like needs to concentrate on that, but this is so important to him that he's willing to use his platform to do something for the benefit of society. And you have to really just admire someone like that. I think that's just so wonderful. And also, because of him, it will attract people who wouldn't normally know how to enter publishing, because publishing is opaque. It isn't the easiest industry to enter into. Like, people still talk in like nonsense jargon about the industry. Because we're so bad at letting people understand how the industry works, people don't know how to enter the industry necessarily. And so when you have someone disruptive like Stormzy come in and go, this industry is for everyone, then I think that's just really wonderful. We can't say we publish the best books until we have tried to get the best books from all possible avenues we can, and then decided what the best books are. And then we have to then question whether we are the best people to decide what the best books are. And so I think people like Stormzy force that conversation.
People like him, I mean, he's a grime artist, love his music. Not many grime artists do what he's doing. He started these initiatives. It's not just this, but there's there's a Cambridge scholarship initiative as well. And so he's entering these spaces which are traditionally, he's taking these initiatives to not sort of new up and coming, modern kind of brands. He's going to what are the sort of historically most traditional institutions, typically, white, male dominated, and trying to bring some diversity into these. And I think it's really admirable. And it's very inspiring for people like me and all the people, I think, who applied to the New Writers Prize, in its first year, and I'm sure this year as well. He's an unusual man in that sense. Don't see any other crime artists doing what he's doing. But it's wonderfully inspirational, wonderfully.
And with someone like him inspiring you to enter the prize, and then a huge publisher like Penguin behind the creation of the actual book, you must have felt really well supported with your first foray into the book world.
This is the thing, I think, particularly for people, who are entering, the Murky New Writers Prize. You're supported by this huge, institution which has such a vast depth of experience and knows exactly what to do with respect to all of this. So I think as an author, your role is basically to write the book, and then you have this immense support network of people who know how to market it and how to design it and how this, all these things that I think as a person who's not in the industry and knows nothing about the industry, you don't think about all of these aspects of how the book comes to be until you're in it. So yeah, I was given, I think at the time that they were designing the cover, I was asked for my preferences, like, do you want people on it, like, do you want it to be typographical, that kind of thing. So you get a bit of input, and then you sort of get to see the final design, but ultimately you're kind of in the hands of the people who know best, because for me in particular, I know nothing about what's an appropriate, cover design for a book. So I was very happy to let Murky handle that, and they did a fantastic job.
The designer in charge of creating the stunning cover was Kira Elliott, who told me a bit more about the work that went into it.
So the brief was essentially just to really kind of showcase a beautiful debut work of literary fiction. So I was given some cover comps to kind of reference to, some being Purple Hibiscus by Chimamanda Ngozi Adichie, and also Homegoing by Yaa Gyasi. Ultimately, this needed to feel like its own kind of skin and its own look. So the brushstrokes, so I actually found them in a book called Textile Designs, and it's a collection by Susan Miller of just various patterns, textile designs that just have various kind of chapters throughout. And I basically went to, so they're categorized even into kind of birds and different animals and, you know, things like this. So I basically found the brushstrokes pattern, and from a distance on the page, I thought it looked a little bit like feathers, because I didn't really want to put literal birds on the cover. So I just thought the kind of brushstrokes nodded towards birds in a way, but also I quite liked the fact that the kind of different colours and textures and tones of them, it sort of hinted and suggested that kind of variety of cultures and people that are explored in the book as well. I thought perhaps having a little flavour and taste of the Ugandan flag might be quite nice, just to kind of add another meaning behind it. So I was partly influenced by that with the colours that I went for in the end. I kind of tweaked them a bit. And I have put spot UV, so that kind of glossy finish over the brushstrokes, to kind of give it that as if it's been painted fresh. I mean, I did about, I think, perhaps eight or nine visuals. A fair few of them had birds on and obvious feathers on and things like that. And I just thought they will probably go with something like that. So at first I thought perhaps I won't put in the brushstrokes visual that I really was drawn to and I really liked. When it was the favourite and the chosen one, it was such a pleasant surprise. And I was so pleased and so chuffed. So I suppose it's the moral of that story is just to put in visuals that you think aren't perhaps the most conventional, because you never know. Every now and then I think one just kind of slips through the net.
It is, of course, what lies between the covers that matters most. And to talk a bit more about the strengths of this debut novel, I spoke with commissioning editor at Murky Books, Lamara Lindsay-Prince.
You know, the moment at which I kind of joined Murky Books, We Are All Birds of Uganda was well on its way. And I remember the quite critical time of, you know, the cover being finalised and the proofs getting ready to go out. And it was at that point that I picked it up and was just launched immediately into a very vivid world, a very London world, and the very clear-cut thoughts of the life and times of Samir, the male protagonist. And through there, kind of, I'm always drawn in, I would say, by like texture in books. So, you know, Hafsa's first references to music, like Hafsa's references to, you know, his flat, his boys, like all of this conversation and chatter happening, and was really hooked from that point. And then when she dips into the kind of the secondary narrative that runs in the book, sitting back and thinking, wow, like this is a level of mastery to hold two brilliant conversations within the pages of this book and make them connected in this way. It really was an interesting read. And I think, you know, knowing how well researched and immersed she is in this story, it goes deeper than the page, if that makes sense. And just knowing, like, you know, there's two critical voices, narratives, like times in history, like so many themes that come out of the past and the present. I was really drawn in by that. And I think the strength of her writing, like I said, like doing that research, like knowing her characters intimately, like thinking, well, at which point do I hark back, or how much has really the past influenced the future? Because, you know, we could say the same, like nothing's new under the sun and history always repeats itself. So to kind of explore that through the book is beautiful. And it made me think of kind of, like other writers who do that well, who deal with history well, like Chimamanda springs to mind, Half of a Yellow Sun springs to mind. And writers who do that, I mean, I envy them to be able to do it so flawlessly, but really, really bring such a textual and like and a weight to the book.
Yeah, I mean, look, ultimately, I'd like the book to be an educational tool, not just educational in respect of the history of South Asians in Uganda and a little bit about sort of the effects of colonialism in Uganda, but also just more generally about, you know, the world in which second generation immigrants live and how issues which affect immigrants kind of are pervasive and timeless. And, you know, things that happened to Hassan as an immigrant living in Uganda, you know, there are things that are happening to Samir as a sort of second generation immigrant living in Britain. And there's questions about whether things have really changed. I mean, overall, and I say this, I right at the beginning, I said to the Murky team that I wanted to have questions for the reader at the end of the book. So these reading group questions, which I had kind of formulated, you know, kind of at the outset, target kind of the issues that I was hoping to that the readers would get stuck into and be able to talk about after they'd finished reading it. I mean, broadly speaking, it covers themes, you know, that are kind of fundamental to every immigrant, issues of identity, belonging, the concept of home and what it means to find home, where is your home, success is a major theme, race is obviously a major theme, religion plays a role as well. I mean, it's all of these kind of facets that make up who a person is, that kind of are central to the novel.
And so with a novel like We Are All Birds of Uganda now published, and a raft of new books from British writers of colour also arriving at the beginning of this year, is there hope that things really are changing? We return to Nikesh Shukla.
We are in an incredible moment right now. Like, this year alone, you know, Hafsa and Kortje Nuland and Selena Godden and Caleb Azuma-Nelson and Samira Shackle and Satnam Sangera and, like, all of these amazing people have put all these brilliant books out, and it feels like a really rich time for books by British writers of colour. Now, what I want is for this to not be a time. I want this to be the norm.
For this to be the norm, we of course need to continue to encourage new voices to emerge and to tell their story. And there are increasing numbers of initiatives out there to support this. But what advice is there for those toying with the idea of writing for the first time? We begin with literary agent Abby Fellows before returning to Hafsa.
I think something people can do at the moment, in particular during the lockdown, is just really look out for virtual events, because I think that a lot of these sessions where there is advice about how to approach agents and how to construct a book proposal and things like that, a lot of that is online at the moment. It's actually, you know, in many ways more inclusive than it has tended to be. So to look out for opportunities, and just, I think, sort of where you can understand the nuts and bolts of how to get an agent in the first place, who to approach, why, and looking out for mentoring sessions and things like that. And I think, you know, things like the Writers' Prize, because, you know, Hafsa won and Monica won too, but there was a writing day for a lot of other writers too. So, you know, even just sort of trying to get in and, you know, you have to be in it to win it. Just enter everything you can find and try to get people to give you feedback.
If I could go back and give myself an advice, it would definitely be, don't wait to write your story. If you have a story and you're passionate about that story, and I think it's really important to write about things that you're passionate about, things that mean something to you, you know, things that you connect with on a personal level, it's just easier to write those things. You know, if you have that, then don't wait for you know, the New Writers Prize to come about. Write your story, and then you don't know what opportunities will come about. I think there's, you know, if you go online and you have a look, there is actually a growing number of opportunities available, you know, unsolicited, you know, kind of agents, you know, if you want to get an agent, agents who are making, you know, calls for like unsolicited manuscripts and all of these sort of prizes. And you can start small doing things and, you know, the local paper and things like that, and then build your way up. But I think my key advice would be, based on my own personal experience, that if you have the story there and you know what you want to write about, just write it.
Thank you to everyone who contributed to this first episode of our new series, and thank you to you too for listening. We Are All Birds of Uganda is out now and available from waterstones.com. We'll be returning to Murky Books in the future in our other series, How We Made, in which we'll hear about their Desmond Elliott Prize-winning triumph, That Reminds Me, by Derek Owusu. Here on This Is The Book, our next episode will take us to the Cornish coastline and the iconic sight of a lighthouse on the horizon, as we speculate how three lighthouse keepers could seem to disappear without trace in The Lamplighters, by Emma Stonex. See you then.